Amateur Traveler Podcast, Episode 69. Today, the Amateur Traveler Podcast goes to Peru and Ecuador in South America.
I got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. I'm looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh no,
15-hour flight. Oh, I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Christensen.
We want to hear about the Paris boutique with the fine silk PJs and the New Orleans cafe with the best beignets. So what's your story? Visit Sheridan.com to share your story and get tips from fellow travelers.
I have three news stories for you today. The first one comes from Tim from the Twisted Wrist Podcast, which is a Canadian motorcycle podcast. Tim sent along an article from the Toronto Star. In part, the article says, the U.S. government knows where you sat on your last cross-border flight, how you paid for your ticket, your email address, your phone number, even your special meal requests in the past. They won't let you look at the information, but they can share it with law enforcement agencies, foreign governments, even public health officials, and they can keep the dossiers compiled on millions of Canadian travelers for up to 40 years. From other articles I've read, this may in fact be an effective technique in terms of security and takes and learns from some of the experience of the Israeli National Airlines that does a lot of psychological profiling, but that doesn't mean people are going to like it, and it doesn't mean that people given a choice are going to come visit the U.S. And in fact, the tourism numbers this year to the U.S. have dropped and have risen for other places like Europe from some international countries. In the second news story, for those of you who've listened to the show for a while, you may remember that memorable show about going to Tonga and swimming with whales. I would not recommend this time a trip to Tonga based on a story from the World Tourism Directory titled Tourists Flee from Riot-Torn Tonga. As you may recall, Tonga is a monarchy, and there are a number of people who are demanding democratic reforms, and as 10,000 people took to the streets, rioting ensued. The troops have actually been brought in from Australia and New Zealand to try and help restore order, but you might want to put off that trip to Tonga for now. In a happier story, the USA Today has an article called What It's the top-rated airline in North America that talks about some people who are doing things right. The top-rated airline in North America would be Continental, which was named the continent's top carrier in several key categories according to Business Traveler Magazine's Best in Business Travel Awards. In addition to being named the survey's best airline for North America travel, Continental was also picked by the Business Travelers readers for having USA's best flight attendants and in-flight services. The best frequent flyer program went to Delta, and the best low-cost carrier went to Frontier Airlines. Your actual experiences may vary. I'd be interested to hear what you think the best airline is in North America. Before I get into the interview with Sasha on South America, I would like to thank Sasha so much because this turned out to be the most difficult interview we'd had, not because of her, but because of some technical issues on my end, and we actually had to start again after about 10 minutes, and I actually flubbed the introduction for this interview about four times, so I appreciate both her patience, and as you'll hear in her story, her poise in light of what turned out to be a more difficult vacation than she had originally planned. I'd like to welcome to this show Sasha. Sasha, welcome to the Amateur Traveler.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you tonight.
Sasha was a friend of Sam who was on recently, talked about his trip to the Himalayas, and Sam put us in touch. Sasha, it just came back from a trip to South America, and I invited her to come onto the show and talk about it. She also has a blog about that. Would you like to give the blog address here? We'll plug your blog here.
Sure. It's a little bit of a mouthful, but it's www.traveljournals.net/travelers/sauntering.
And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And so, Sasha, you went to some unusual spots in terms of South America. You went to Ecuador, Peru, and a little bit of Bolivia.
Right. I guess I was sort of looking for a less touristy experience. I've been to a lot of countries, and although they've been interesting, I've been surrounded by so many Americans and the French and the English, and I kind of just wanted to connect to a culture that hadn't been touched so much by our proclivities toward tourism.
So this is obviously, you didn't do a bus tour. You didn't do the big package tour here. You were traveling by yourself?
Well, I was traveling by myself, but because I was a little nervous, I ended up going through a travel company and having a guided tour for a duration of my trip.
Oh, okay. Which part of the trip, then, did you use the guided tour for?
Well, actually, it was from the start to the end because I was going to stay for longer, but I ended up having an accident and I had to go back home after the trip had ended. So we could get to that. It's a, you know, story.
Well, so stay tuned and you'll hear about Sasha's accident here. I hadn't heard about that yet. So where did you start? Where did you fly into?
I flew into Quito, and it was a really interesting time. I was convinced that someone up above was out to get me because there was a lot of rain in New York where I was flying from. Then going to Miami, there was the hurricane or tropical storm Ernesto. Then around Quito or around the Banos area, there was a volcanic eruption. So it was an interesting couple of hours, you know, sitting on planes up in the sky wondering what was going to happen.
Actually, back up here just a little bit. There was a what? There was a volcanic eruption as you're flying into town. All right.
Well, it had happened a couple days before.
Okay.
And the thing is, everyone expected that there was going to be more eruptions because apparently the nature of this volcano was to erupt every certain number of days when there was that first initial eruption.
Okay.
So the town had been evacuated on one side for a few days, and when we actually drove through it, it was really amazing looking how everything was just so ashy, and it really just looked like a totally fallen, barren city. Very bizarre. But I made it, so.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's an interesting. Did you think at that point about just turning around and going home? Or, I mean, that's an unusual start to a trip.
Well, I actually never thought about that.
Okay.
Because my philosophy is that if I'm going to get injured or die, I might as well be lucky enough to do it with something that I love. I mean, I'd rather go out having done the things that make me happy than living a life of safety and slipping and falling and killing myself on a banana peel, you know, in the middle of my hallway, if I had a banana peel in my hallway, which I don't. But the point still exists.
And just actually, you said you flew into Quito. I'm not sure everybody knows where Quito is.
Oh, well, then I flew into Quito in Ecuador. That's the capital. Mm-hmm.
And Ecuador is a fairly small country. And
it really is.
And I should let people know that this is actually the second time we've started this interview because of networking issues. You had mentioned, I had talked to you before, that I don't think a lot of people can find Ecuador on the map even. You want to position us where you are in South America?
You know, there is some countries above us, but basically below us is Peru. It's on the east of the South American continent. And, I mean, to be honest, I probably was one of those people who didn't know exactly where it was before either. And it was interesting to hear how so many people warned me to be careful, thinking that I was going to be an abducted American who would then, you know, my face would appear on the news and Shining Path, one of the terrorist organizations that apparently has been, I don't know, active for a certain number of years, would have me. So it didn't help.
And Ecuador is also on the equator, as the name implies. So you're right there in the middle of the tropics.
And actually, one of the most interesting museums is called the Solar Museum. It's just maybe half an hour outside of Quito. And they have a red line that's painted where the equator is. And they have these various experiments to show people the power of standing in the center of the Earth. For instance, this one demonstration showed that the water flows differently in a sink with the drain open. It flows differently when you're in the center, when you're on the left side of the equator, and when you're on the right side of the equator. It flows straight down in the middle, and it flows clockwise and counterclockwise on either side of the equator. And it's like these small changes that you would never think could actually make a difference. Mm. It was a really interesting museum. And they also showed the process of shrinking heads, in case you would ever want to try it at home.
Okay.
Not okay.
Is that something you write to your mother and say, I've been to a museum that tells me how to shrink heads, or is that something you just leave out when you're corresponding with home?
Oh, I don't usually leave things out. I tell them just about everything, which is probably why they think I'm a little bit psycho. But they don't put a tight leash on me, so that's good.
And I should ask, what led you to South America in the first place?
I have to say that I'm just very open-minded about the world and where I would like to go. Since I was traveling by myself, I really decided that for the time and the moment in my life, it was just a good idea to go to South America where I could speak Spanish and, I don't know, where I think the culture would be an interesting mix of the exotic and the familiar.
And then you had mentioned that you had originally planned to go to Southeast Asia at this point.
That was true. I actually took a bunch of classes to learn about the culture of Southeast Asia so that I could go there and be informed. Then I just became the stereotypical ignorant tourist in South America. But
well, you spoke the language, so that does not make you a stereotypical ignorant American.
Thank you. I mean, I did have my American tourist moments, but...
What was the biggest surprise? When were you taken most aback by the differences in the culture?
The biggest surprise to me was probably just how kind everyone was to everybody else on the whole. I felt like I was really just meeting new members of my family almost everywhere that I went. I mean, I think it helped that I spoke Spanish,
sure.
But they were proud of their culture, but they were interested in learning about mine and sharing with me their ways. And it was just such an incredible place to be, I don't know, to be welcomed, because there are a lot of differences in the culture. There was one day when I was in the islands on Lake Titicaca, and this one island called Amantani, which means lover's island, they were telling us about how their rituals for wooing one another used to involve throwing stones and reflecting mirrors and blasting boomboxes. And, I mean, I don't know. It's something that makes you realize a lot about your own culture and why people do what they do. So I think that how welcoming they were and how easily they wanted to share their information with me was probably the biggest surprise.
And
that, and the fact that they have fries with like every dish, and it's delicious, but kind of a surprise when you order.
When you say throwing stones as part of a courting ritual, at each other, for distance, or accuracy?
No, literally at each other. I mean, I wouldn't call it stoning per se, but like, you know,
that's
I imagine
different.
That it was small pebbles. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, definitely different than what you've originally heard of rock throwing. But yeah.
So you flew into Ecuador. Where did you go from there? And what else did you see while you were in Ecuador?
I guess after I went to Quito, we flew into the Amazon in the Coca region. And we spent a few days there in this jungle lodge called La Selva. They have a website. And the next few days were just unbelievable because of the sounds and the smells, and it was just so beautiful, and it was unlike anything I've ever seen before. Then when we flew out of it, we went to a town called Banos.
Well, don't fly out of the Amazon just yet here. You've tantalized us here. The smells and the sounds were different. Can you describe some of the difference? I mean, obviously it's hard to put smells in a podcast, but what sort of things are you seeing that are so different?
I guess if there's one word that I had to describe it, it would be purity. I mean, imagine taking a deep breath and not having to smell car fumes or the smoke from factories. Not hearing a radio blasting anywhere, just hearing the birds and the insects and the fish that jump up and splash back into the water. There were just so many things that you could spend hours thinking about. Like one day when we were taking a pass, they give you these high boots to wear because it gets really muddy. Our guide showed us a walking palm, and it's a tree with its roots literally above the ground, and they move a couple inches or a couple centimeters every year just to go toward the sunlight because they're competing with the rest of this ecosystem around them for the sunlight. So to imagine a tree moving, I mean, it reminds me of when I was younger and I would watch these Disney movies where the trees chase the little kids. And then I think about how it could be such a beautiful metaphor for just having to move to find the light. I don't know. There are just so many things in the Amazon that you wouldn't even imagine could exist, but they do.
Hmm. Okay, now you can move on. Where did you go from there?
So from there, I went to a town called Banos, which was really beautiful. And it means basically bathrooms.
Hot springs, or?
Yeah, they have hot springs there, and they have a lot of different water sports that you can do. I actually went whitewater rafting for the first time and had a really scarily humored man in control of my raft who basically, he hardly trained us for the trip and then would slap the surface of the water and pretend like there was an anaconda or a caiman, and he got such a kick out of it. Meanwhile, there's another raft full of a bunch of Ecuadorian boys who are hitting on us and following us and trying to take us out of our raft and put us into theirs. And it was very unexpected, but it was a fun experience, something I don't know if I would do again, but that's really what Banos is known for.
Okay.
And after that, I went to a town called Cuenca, which is a small colonial city that sits atop of these crossing rivers. And it's very artistic. It's very musical, and lots of writers, poets, painters, nice parks to sit in. And it was really lovely. I felt like I was in like a mini version of Europe when we were in Cuenca. And from there, we went into Peru, and the border was pretty scary, actually. It was very dangerous. There apparently are a lot of kidnappings, and passports are stolen. So it seemed dramatic. But once we were in Peru, everything changed. Everything was really exciting. Some of the highlights would probably be Lima and Cusco.
Now, one thing I have to wonder with Lima and Cusco is you have the altitude to deal with.
Yes.
First of all, how did that work for you? Because how high up is Lima?
I could probably find a book and tell you, but I don't really know off the top of my head. It's high. Quito is high, too. So I sort of acclimated when I was in Quito, and then we would just go up and down a little bit. But I know that the highest point from my trip was at Coca Canyon, which is a few hours outside of Arequipa, and it was almost 5,000 meters, and it's the deepest canyon in the world. I guess to adjust, as much as Bush tries to demonize coca, it's really the leaves that make a huge difference in how you feel, at least for me. It really calms your stomach, it takes away your headache, it makes you feel less nauseous. It's a wonderful cure-all.
But you're still not getting a lot of oxygen, so I found at 11,000 feet that I couldn't walk very far without being out of breath. You're going mm-hmm. for hikes at what is over 15,000 feet if you're at 5,000 meters.
Yeah. I guess at this point I should explain to you that at this point in the trip when we went up to the canyon, mm-hmm. I wasn't able to walk very well or walk at all. When we were in Ica, which is a desert region in northern Peru, I was sandboarding, and I'm not a very athletic or a very coordinated person in general, so I went down the dune wrong and ended up having the skin on my feet kind of sand burned off.
Oh.
I couldn't really wear shoes, but I needed to wear shoes, and it basically resulted in me not being able to walk, and the rest of the trip I was literally looked at as the gimp. And everyone would stare at me. I ended up having two pieces of paper in my jeans, in my pocket. One was in Spanish and one was in English, and they both had the exact same story of what happened to me. Because everywhere I went, people would ask, "What's wrong with you?" They see a young girl walking like an old woman. And therefore, when we went to the top of this canyon, I basically had to sit at the hotel and look at the view and read and write and do not much else other than get pecked by the alpaca that was roaming the hotel.
Hmm.
Yeah. They just decided that this alpaca belonged in the hotel. Alpacas are a lot like llamas, and they have really, really high quality, I guess it's fur. They use them to make what they think is, or what they claim is better than cashmere. So they have a lot of pride in their alpaca, and this one alpaca was just roaming the hotel, and it was very aggressive toward its guests.
All right. You don't generally look for that in a hotel, but...
Yeah, so that's something to be aware of, you know, the roaming animals in hotels, definitely. Be on your guard. Not for the pickpocketers, but for the roaming alpaca.
I believe I've seen a t-shirt to that effect. So you're how far into your trip here, and now you've sandblasted your feet here doing, so you're not actually recommending dune surfing as much?
Oh, I'm definitely against it now. Just for the fact that they aren't very informative in the preparations behind the sports. They think it's fun, they think that everyone knows how to do it, and at least I can't really generalize. I should just say that from my experience, there really wasn't much, I don't know, care taken toward the security of the people who engaged in these sports. So not really going to recommend it unless you like those types of thrills. I'm more of a culture person, but I guess I was just looking to try lots of things. But that was actually 2 or 2.5 weeks into my trip,
okay.
And I toughed it out for 3 more weeks.
Oh my!
Which was, yeah, it was hard because I literally took cabs everywhere and would like, I had a formula. I would sit in the park, I would read, I would write, I would talk to people, find a place in close proximity to have lunch, maybe find an internet cafe and go back until I needed to go out again. And actually, one demonstration of the kindness in Peru were the fact that some of the cab drivers wouldn't even charge me for the ride because they saw that I was injured. And, you know, In a country where you can look at tourists and think they must have more money than me, I think that that's a really gracious thing.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think, besides that, that you also saw some of the people or the country in a different way because of your injury? I mean, most people would get the injury, they'd fly home at that point, that they're done. How mm-hmm. did your trip change because of that? Obviously, you couldn't walk as much.
Well, I think that I honestly needed the trip as an escape because my life was getting a little out of hand after I graduated. And
I don't think we said in this version of the show, the last time we did this show, you mentioned that you just graduated from college in May.
Right. I graduated from college in May, and I wanted to have this trip as a sort of last hurrah before I got a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I was lost, and I was getting out of a long relationship that I didn't want to end. And so there were a lot of issues that I was bringing along with me on my trip. And when I got injured, I had to just wait. I had to be patient. And, you know, there were times when I was frustrated. Sometimes I felt bad for myself. But it ended up healing. And that's sort of the way that I looked at the entire experience of the trip. It wasn't just a physical injury that needed time to heal. It was my emotional baggage. And I think that it made me see a very humane, empathetic side to the people of Ecuador and Bolivia, because, you know, they did look at me and feel pity, but I don't know, it was more than that, because they were really willing to help me. Any time that there was a staircase, there would automatically be someone there to help me go down them or ascend them.
Hmm.
And I don't know, I felt lucky to be there. And actually, when I flew home and I still couldn't really walk very well, when I got into the first airport in the U.S., it was like no one cared. No one tried to help me walk. I even saw one of those airport workers who was rolling an empty wheelchair, and I said, you know, is there any way that you can help me, because I have to catch this plane and it's across the airport. And she just shook her head, and it made me see that the people in South America just cared a lot more for strangers than we do in this culture.
Interesting. You had said that some of the cultural things are normally what are the highlights for you, and Peru having such an old culture. Is there anything that stands out for you from Peru?
I think the most obvious thing would be Machu Picchu.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple hours outside of Cusco, which was the old Inca capital, and it's just the most unbelievable, unforgettable sight that I think I've ever seen in my life. And maybe that doesn't mean much to people who have never found out what I've done in my life before. I think it was just such an interesting mixture between a breathtaking landscape and the ability of human beings to create such an incredible structure. I mean, the stonework, it's not like they could use the structures or the materials that we use to carve the material, or even to carry it from one place to another. And the fact that this was a city that functioned it's really unbelievable. And it's definitely a crowded place to go. If you go early in the morning, you end up feeling like you sort of have the city to yourself to walk around. But as the day continues, it really starts to overflow. I also heard that there is a ruin that's almost equal in size and magnitude that's in the Amazon of Peru, but it takes about 8 or 9 days to get there, and you have to walk.
Hmm.
So most people aren't really inclined to do that, unfortunately. But it's amazing, because there is still so much that can be discovered in Peru. It will just be uncovered as time goes by.
And my impression is that Machu Picchu, when you're there, the scope of it is larger than it appears for us who are just looking at the typical picture of Machu Picchu. Is that correct?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, you know, I never really think that pictures do an accurate job of depicting what it really is like to be there. I mean, you see it, but you don't feel it. And, you know, you can't look around and get different angles.
Well, the other thing I'm thinking is, you're there also, you're learning more. You've got a guide with you who's explaining to you what we understand about the people as they lived there. Any surprises that came out of the details that they're filling in there?
I thought that one of the most interesting parts of it was that the name Machu Picchu, it's not even really pronounced that way. And when you pronounce it like that, you end up calling it... well, you can edit this part out. Sorry, keep doing this. But when you say Machu Picchu, you're saying old penis instead of old mountain. It's actually Machu Picchu. And so to me, now that I know, like, I can kind of chuckle, because See, like, it always ends up somehow going back to this idea of inappropriate material.
So the correct way to say it is Machu Picchu?
Yes, Machu Picchu.
With a and hard C in there.
Yeah, Machu. Okay. And everyone can seem to pronounce it in Peru, but it's the outsiders who come who end up butchering it. It's kind of amusing to me that we admire it so much, and we've had all of these researches go and explore, and yet it's not really pronounced correctly.
Anything else, as somebody is thinking about this trip, that they should keep in mind? You haven't said anything about the food.
I mean, I did say that whole French fry thing.
French fry thing, that's true.
I mean, I thought that the food was really delicious. It's not expensive. Mm-hmm. It was, for the most part, well-prepared. It was served with warmth. There was diversity in what you could get. I actually really regret not ordering koi, which is guinea pig. It's a delicacy. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive, and usually you have to share it with another person, which is probably why I couldn't get it. They definitely do things their own way. Ceviche is another typical dish, which is raw fish. Well, I guess it's not really raw because it's still sort of soaked in this lime juice, but their food was really terrific, and I miss it now. So,
okay.
What more can I say about the trip?
What do you wish you had known before you went? Besides don't dune surf.
You know, I think I kind of liked not knowing anything. I think I kind of liked not knowing what to expect. Because for me, expectations usually lead to disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that it was a very easy area to navigate myself through. With people being so helpful and being able to speak Spanish, I really didn't feel like I needed so much preparation for this trip.
I would assume that other people who were on the tour with you couldn't speak Spanish, not everybody
That's
could.
True.
How did they
That's
get by
true.
Without the Spanish?
Well, they basically got by looking like idiots. I guess that sounds kind of cruel and harsh, but instead of saying cuánto cuesta, which means how much does this cost, one girl asked how much she cost. Someone else, instead of saying where is the bathroom, asked where was the devil. And, you know, they sort of were humbled by that experience, which I think was good because years go by and you're making money and you have enough to afford this trip and you might get a little high on yourself. So it's never bad to be brought back down. They definitely used me. I was popular when it came to sitting down and ordering food.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people can speak English in South America, from what I was realizing. They want to, and they'll practice the few words that they know, which, you know, might be Bush or I don't know, Clinton. But you know, you make an effort to try together. It's what mm-hmm. it seems like, and it works.
Any closing remarks? You would recommend the trip?
I would recommend this trip to someone who is open-minded, someone who has a sense of adventure and wants to step out of their comfort zone and try something new. I mean, I think that you can make the most and learn from wherever you go. So if Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia aren't really your idea of an ideal vacation, you should still try and make wherever you want to go happen, because it's when you go to new places that you're able to realize so much about your familiar places, and it's just so rewarding to do something different for yourself.
And I'll put links to your travel blog, which will give us obviously many more details in the show notes so that people can find out more details about the trip. And Sasha, I thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me. It was nice being able to chat.
After I finished the interview with Sasha, she and I talked for probably another half hour about eating 79-cent meals in Peru or the beauty of the city that is Cusco. And she does pass along that she has healed. Her feet have fully healed. So if you're looking for any more details about her trip, I will put links in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com to her travel journal. And Sasha, thanks so much for being on the show. I have three internet resources for you today, all pertinent to South America. The first one is A real fascinating thing. One photographer, Scott Howard, has taken 400 different images of Machu Picchu and has stitched them into a 1,500 megapixel picture and put it in an interface on the web that allows you to zoom in on it and see not just the overview, but zoom in on the individual tourists who are walking around the city. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com or in the enhanced iTunes version. The second one, besides going to Machu Picchu, or Machu Picchu, you might also think about going to Caral, Peru, which is a city which dates back 5,000 years. And I'll put an article on the show notes about Caral. And then the third one is, if you're interested in a different kind of experience in South America, I have an article about Spanish immersion education, Spanish immersion trips, two-week escapes into South America. So I'll put links to all of those in the show notes. In the community section of the show, I had a nice letter this week from Nancy from Door County, Wisconsin. In this small world story, it turns out that Nancy had played a shareware game I had written for the Mac decades ago, Cribbage Shareware. And when she found out that the same person who had made the Norway podcast that she had listened to was the person who'd written that, she wrote me this nice letter. Then after many years of enjoying a game, I'd like to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I've used your game in my sixth grade classroom and have many students who have loved the game ever after. We no longer have Macs in our school, or I would be using it still. If you're ever in Door County, Wisconsin, please stop in for some nice tea and a hug. Or if you're not a hugger, at least the tea and some thank yous. Thank you, Nancy. I'm not sure the next time I'll get to Wisconsin. I do have family there, as I mentioned in the letter I wrote back. And I am, in fact, a hugger. I always enjoy hearing from all of you, so feel free to drop me a note at host@amateurtraveler.com, leave a comment on amateurtraveler.com, or go to the discussion boards at amateurtraveler.com/board. And remember, we still have a contest that will end at the end of this year that I'm going to choose a post at random from the discussion boards, and provided that post is not spam, but something that encourages community on the board, the person who posted that will receive an iPod Shuffle. And with that, I feel that I've taken up enough of your time, and like a guest who stayed too long, there's nothing left to say, but thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.